The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. We are always glad to have you. Today, we're going to be talking about cyber intelligence, but not necessarily always the dynamics of the threats and how to deal with them. But we're going to be looking at the workforce. How do we recruit the right kind of talent in order to deal with these threats, current and also in the future? And we're going to be talking about this with Dr. Ron Sanders. He's the vice president and senior fellow at Booz Allen Hamilton. And he's also formerly associate director of national intelligence and the first chief human capital officer in the U.S. intelligence community. He's with us today on Fed Access. We're going to be talking about the different issues in terms of the workforce, recruiting the right kind of people to come into the intelligence community to deal with this. Of course, the intel community is competing with private sector and everyone else because everyone is dealing with cybersecurity. Everyone is dealing with cyber intelligence. Welcome, Dr. Sanders. Welcome to Fed Access.
Thanks, Derek. Glad to be here.
Hey, you know, talk to us, Dr. Sanders, about the whole dynamic of what's going on. When we look at kind of cybersecurity, cyber intelligence, what are we dealing with right now? And as you look at the workforce and some of the things you've dealt with throughout the intel community, now at Booz Allen, and also now with you working with the Intelligence National Security Alliance with INSA, what are we concerned about as it relates to the workforce and the threats that are out there?
Derek, look, I think what's becoming more and more clear is that this is not just a technical problem. The cybersecurity challenge, the whole host of cybersecurity threats, at first blush, appear to be technical, but we all know that behind the zeros and ones are people. And it's pretty clear that when we talk about critical infrastructure, I would contend that people, our cyber professionals, are the most important critical infrastructure. And the bottom line up front is that there are just not enough of them. The threats keep going up. They become more and more varied, more and more complex. That means the demand for cyber ninjas, the cyber pros who can deal with those threats, keeps going up. And unfortunately, the supply side curve of cyber talent is not keeping pace. And while the supply has increased, the output of our colleges and universities and our community colleges and our company training programs, et cetera, has ramped up, there is still a significant gap between demand and supply, and it's growing. Booz Allen recently published a report with ISC Squared, the cyber certification consortium, on a particularly acute talent gap in cyber, and that has to do with women in cyber. There are a lot of very talented women, both technically oriented and otherwise, and we'll talk about the otherwise here later in the program. And for whatever reason, they're not being recruited, attracted, retained in the cyber world. And I will argue that that's one potentially powerful source for closing the talent gap. But a talent gap there is. And it's worth worrying about and trying to deal with as a national problem. Now, let me focus that down because I know you want to talk a little bit about the paper that that I had a hand in that INSA recently published.
And let me even talk about that paper real quick. It's called Cyber Intelligence, Preparing Today's Talent for Tomorrow's Threats. And Dr. Sanders, while you're going on, and because you were on the road, which I think is the right, you're kind of putting the right frame of it in. But as we think about kind of cyber intelligence, I mean, I think sometimes people wonder, What is this right now? We hear cybersecurity. People know about network security, the people who can, you know, stop people from penetrating a network and everything else. But this field of cyber intelligence, what is this encompassing? Is it a combination of everything? What kind of experts are we looking for?
Cyber intelligence is an emerging skill set in the broader range of cyber skills. The National Initiative on Cybersecurity Education, a.k.a. NICE, has done a tremendous job in sort of cataloging all of the work roles, specialty areas, and competencies around cybersecurity as they exist today. And as you would expect, they're very, very technically oriented. There are some threads in the NICE framework that deal with cyber intelligence, but relatively limited way, in my opinion, as well as those who had a hand in the paper. This is not, repeat, not just looking at malware, looking at digital forensics, looking at an attack sort of after the fact and trying to tease out intelligence that is information that decision makers can use to prevent the next attack. That's certainly one piece of this. Typically, cyber threat analysts worry about malware and attack vectors and attack surfaces, et cetera. What we talk about in the paper is an emerging skill set that is a blend of that technical cyber focus on zeros and ones with what is more classically an intelligence analyst role with all of its attendant tradecraft, hypothesis testing, red teaming, research methodology, all designed to parse a cloud of information and get to the ground truth. And there are thousands of people in the intelligence community that are engaged in that classic intelligence analysis work, only a fraction actually dealing with it from a cybersecurity standpoint. And what we've seen, first in government, but now in industry, interestingly enough, is this notion of a cyber intelligence analyst, a blend of the analytic tradecraft that analysts use in the intelligence community to gauge the intentions and capabilities of an adversary with the technical side of this malware attack vector zeros and ones. It is a unique and, I think, a potentially very powerful combination, and we're building it from the ground up. The purpose of the paper is to try to build it from the top down, to set a framework for competencies and skills and career paths where today most organizations are sort of making this up as they go.
You know, when we look at higher education right now, Dr. Sanders, and you know, we kind of mentioned this about a lot, I don't really see a lot of cyber intelligence, and it almost seems as if there's a sense of urgency right now where we need to kind of change the framework from just preventative measures and the network security dynamic to where this cyber intelligence specialist can now not only, you know, see who's attacking, but understand why they're attacking, understand where they're coming from, and then work with all the different agencies, law enforcement, defense, intelligence, and military, whatever, and then start working to maybe catch this person or stop it. Is that where we're headed?
That's exactly where we're headed, and it's an apt phrase because I think this is about trying to predict the next attack. So, and the tools are beginning to emerge, Derek, that will allow us to do that. I don't mind telling you that Booz Allen has its own predictive intelligence unit. And we sell intelligence bulletins, again, predictive intelligence bulletins to subscribers, organizations that are worried about that next attack. We're not the only ones to do that. Obviously, there are people in the intelligence community and in the Department of Homeland Security that are beginning to master these same predictive intelligence tools. But you put your finger on it. It's all about finding out more about the adversaries, understanding how they're led, what their intentions are, and what their capabilities are. And here's the interesting twist in the cyber world. These are not just state actors. These are non-state actors, in some cases acting as proxies for nation states. These are criminal organizations. These are terrorist organizations. These are hacktivists. These are, quote, lone wolves, unquote, who happen to be adept at a computer. All of those are in the adversary set that we're dealing with, and as you know, any one of them, separately or in combination, which is a scary thought, can wreak havoc on an organization's network. So having analysts who are there on the watch, who are looking ahead, not waiting for that first hiccup on the dashboard that says something's going wrong with the system, not waiting for that, but getting out ahead of that, looking at chatter on the dark web, for example, and trying to tease out where a particular adversary may be heading, what that adversary's motivations may be, and most importantly, what that adversary's targets and modus operandi may be.
Dr. Stanley, we got to take a quick break. I want to keep on talking about this. You mentioned a couple of different things in terms of predictive intelligence, in terms of, you know, looking at things and really kind of, you know, not waiting for the attack, but also kind of really kind of addressing it ahead of time. I want to kind of keep on talking about that, but then also talk about what the competition is with the private sector, you know, versus the national security sector. It seems like we're competing against a small group of talented people, and we've got to really kind of work on this dynamic. We're talking to Dr. Ron Sanders. He is an expert on what's going on cyber field right now. He's dealing with the human capital side of it. He's a vice president and senior fellow at Booz Allen Hamilton. He's formerly associate director of national intelligence and the first chief human capital officer for the U.S. intelligence community. We're going to keep on talking to Dr. Sanders and continue to get his expertise when we come back. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about cyber. We've been talking about cyber intelligence. We're talking about the workforce in the cyber intelligence community, not just building people who can prevent the attacks, but also now dealing with people and building a cyber intelligence analyst who can predict the threats, who can now kind of forecast and look to see where maybe a criminal actor is going, maybe where a terrorist is going, maybe where a lone wolf actor is going. What are they trying to get this info? What are they trying to get when they do a cyber attack? What are they trying to go with this information? Are they going to use it for espionage purposes, for criminal in terms of identity theft? What is the reason why they're doing this? We're talking about building the workforce for the future. We're talking to Dr. Ron Sanders. He's vice president and senior fellow at Booz Allen Hamilton. He's a former associate director of national intelligence, and he was the first chief human capital officer in the U.S. intelligence community. He was the one who's been dealing with these issues for a long time, really kind of seeing where we're weak at in terms of bringing the right talent in and how do we get stronger? How do we build the workforce for the future to deal with this kind of stuff? You know, Dr. Sanders, as we look at this, you know, and we look at the dynamic of kind of building this analyst, this kind of, you know, person who can emerge and understand the tradecraft of intelligence, understand the skill sets of intelligence, understand the analytical models of intelligence, but then understand the cyber world. What is your competition right now? Are you competing against the Googles? You're competing against the major firms out there? Where's the national security apparatus on this in terms of getting the right talent? And who's your competition?
Well, look, let's talk about the word competition, because while there is a shortage of this kind of talent, and our colleges and universities are just now beginning to ramp up to develop this kind of talent, and I hope we get a chance to talk about what that means, the fact is that this takes a village. And while we may be competing for individual cyber professionals because of the talent shortage, I think all of those who are in that labor market competing for that talent need to work together to improve the supply. So I'll give you an example, Derek, and this is going on literally as we speak. Booz Allen and a number of other private companies several years ago banded together to work with the University of Maryland University College to develop a cybersecurity curriculum. And if anybody lives inside the Beltway, they've probably seen the UMUC commercials. All of the employers in the area, both public and private, because there were some government agencies there who shall remain nameless, they all shared an interest in increasing the talent pool available to them in the Central Maryland area. And so while we may compete for individual talent, we all have to collaborate and cooperate to increase the supply of that talent. And I think that goes that's even more the case for this emerging discipline of cyber intelligence. So while there's competition between public and private for the talent pool, again, this is a collective problem. Let me just focus a bit on the competition, because I think, if anything, Derek, it's going to get worse,
okay,
more acute. And if you're a cyber professional thinking about whether you become a cyber intelligence analyst, I'll tell you, you're going to be in demand if that's your choice. Because it's not just government agencies competing with government contractors for the talent pool. At Booz Allen, we do a lot of commercial cybersecurity work. And the companies that we work with have the same need It's not a cyber intelligence analyst necessarily looking at a particular nation state, although, as you suggested a few minutes ago, there are nation states that actually engage in cyber industrial espionage. And it's not clear where the federal government's responsibilities end and the private company's responsibilities begin. And many, many companies, having learned this the hard way, are taking this into their own hands. They are developing what is, for all practical purposes, a cyber intelligence analyst. Now, it's a more of a business orientation. This isn't a national, you know, there's not a national security focus, but it's the same mindset. Who are our adversaries? What are they after? What are their intentions? What are their capabilities from a cyber standpoint? Do we have data that would be valuable to them? Do we have intellectual property on our networks, work processes, patents, et cetera, that would be valuable? How do we protect it? There's another interesting sub-discipline at work here, Derek. Call it cyber counterintelligence. And because almost everything we do is on the web today, and companies conduct commerce on the web, this is much like, you know, security on the high seas several hundred years ago. They have got to worry first about protecting their own rank, and that means, bottom line, they're in the same competition for talent.
Right.
And until the training factory, the education system, ramps up to produce more of that talent, again, that competition is going to be pretty severe.
You know, as I was reading the report that you guys did for INSA, and if anybody wants to find it, they can find it on the INSA website, the Intelligence and National Security Alliance website. Great report called "The Cyber Intelligence: Preparing Today's Talent for Tomorrow's Threat." And Dr. Sanders was one of the authors of this report on the writing team of this. But as I was reading through Dr. Sanders, I mean, just, you know, the skill set that is required and you know, in terms of building the right kind of person, you're talking about critical thinking. You're talking about, you know, a person who understands data collection. You're talking about information security, technical exploitation, and kind of putting this into one person. You know, is this a dynamic of kind of almost building a program, an undergraduate, a graduate, where a person will come in right away and maybe come out of a STEM high school, you know, the science, technology, engineering, and math high schools or something like that, and then swing in and really kind of hit this thing hard and heavy?
That's certainly something that I think the authors and reviewers of the paper would advocate, that there actually be clearly defined degree programs and courseware and curricula that will train a growing cadre of cyber intelligence analysts. I will expand, though, on your pipeline, because I think what we've seen, both in the cyber world, but more importantly, even more broadly in the analytic world, particularly in the intelligence analysts, is that there are two paths. I'll generalize a bit, but there are two paths to success here. One is somebody who is very technically oriented, but who can then learn the analytic mindset, hypothesis testing, critical thinking, and these there is a tradecraft, there are techniques, but there's also a mindset here. So somebody who comes with a technical background and learns the analytic skills. But we have seen just as much success coming up the other way, coming up as somebody who's got the critical thinking skill, a philosophy major, somebody who's come up with a degree in logic. Some of the most competent intelligence analysts have been history majors or liberal arts graduates. Now, they have to have enough technical aptitude to learn about cyber. They've got to learn about malware and attack vectors and those throws and plans, to the point of writing source code or reverse engineering somebody else's source code, but they need to know generally what's going on so they can apply that to their own tradecraft. But we've seen people come up both routes, and I think what we've advocated as an initial step is to provide people who have one or the other background a way to learn to cross-pollinate. But ultimately, I think this is going to take a specialized program that admits students from either track and then puts them together, because I think putting them together is potentially way more powerful, sort of 1 + 1 = 4.
And Dr. Sanders, let me hold you right there, because I mean, I want to keep on talking about this, because basically we're talking about building, you know, programs that really either don't exist or only exist in kind of a piecemeal dynamic right now. We're talking about building schools and building programs that kind of, you know, bring in all these different factors. And like you said, you know, sometimes a philosophy major thinks, I can't do the technical work. I don't understand cyber. And so they're very, very hesitant, and maybe getting people past that dynamic or past that mindset, like, listen, you know, you don't have to know how to do the code, but we just want you to understand what the threats are, what the malware is, what this language means, so you can talk to the people who do the code and then kind of work with them in order to understand the threats and everything else. We're talking to Dr. Ron Sanders. He is an expert on this issue of cyber intelligence and really the workforce dynamic, the human capital area of cyber intelligence, and how do we make sure that we are getting the right kind of talent right now to deal with not just the threats for today, but the threats for tomorrow that we have not even foreseen yet. He's vice president and senior fellow at Booz Allen Hamilton. He's formerly associate director of National Intelligence and the first chief human capital officer in the U.S. intelligence community. We're going to keep on talking about these issues when we come back. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about cyber intelligence, not necessarily the threats, because we kind of all know what the threats are that are out there. But we're talking about the workforce right now. We're talking about the talent. How do we make sure we have the right people doing the right job working in cyber intelligence to deal with the current threats, but also predict and deal with the threats for the future? How do we build this cyber intelligence analyst? This is kind of a new dynamic in which we're talking about. We've had intel analysts in the intel community, but we're now talking about building a person who can necessarily work not only in national security, but possibly working in corporations and other places to look at these threats, stop them, predict them for the future, and then come up with ways to deal with them. We've been talking to Dr. Ron Sanders. He is one of the authors of a paper, and we'll talk about the paper in a second, but he's vice president and senior fellow at Booz Allen Hamilton. He's formerly associate director of National Intelligence and the first chief human capital officer for the U.S. intelligence community. He was part of a team who wrote this paper called Cyber Intelligence, Preparing Today's Talent for Tomorrow's Threats. It was published by INSA, the Intelligence and National Security Alliance, and you can go there. I think INSA Online is the website, but really just go ahead and Google Cyber Intelligence, Preparing Today's Talent for Tomorrow's Threats. And this paper is going to come up, download it. It will give you a lot of insight. If you are a person in the intel community or you're a person thinking about cyber, you need to read this document, because it really talks about what do you need to do in order to become that cyber intelligence analyst. Dr. Sanders, you know, I know you guys at INSA, you really do focus in on mentorship. You focus in on professional development, and you really kind of hit it where you were talking about taking these liberal arts majors and then turning them, who have that analytical mindset possibly, and turning them into cyber intelligence analysts, and then taking a technical person who understands cybersecurity from the coding and from all the malware and everything else, who maybe can produce this stuff or stop it, and then giving them the analytical model. How do we do that as it relates to that professional development? And what are we talking about with INSA and everything else?
So this is, in the first resort, something that is amenable to a classic academic degree program. But that's table stakes. This is as much art as it is science. There are instincts involved. If you understand the term tradecraft, it's not just a series of tools and techniques. It's figuring out how to connect the dots. That sort of systems thinking approach to a problem. So I think this, amongst many disciplines, but maybe this above all, is amenable to mentorship, particularly peer-to-peer mentorship or near-peer mentorship. Think of it as an apprentice program or a master analyst, somebody who's learned the instincts of connecting the dots, works with somebody more junior who may know the technical tool set, and again, not just the cyber side, but the data analytics side, the hypothesis testing, the red teaming, the critical thinking techniques that are involved. Somebody that has that tool set but is just starting out, it takes experience And that's where mentorship comes into play. I am a big fan of mentorship. I think I frankly think it's the responsibility of every senior to begin building and developing one or more successors, so that when you move on, the knowledge transfer isn't painful or problematic.
And, Dr. Sandy,
and I think it ought to be a formal responsibility. And I think in this particular discipline, it's especially critical.
Dr. Sanders, speak on this, because I think you're right on point with saying that. And I think more people need to become mentors and then also, you know, get into mentorship programs. And that can happen at any age and any level of profession. You know, what do you feel, especially, you know, coming from where you're coming from in terms of seeing things at the highest level of national security, of the intel community? You know, how important are like associations like INSA and other associations? How important is it to get involved in something like that and maybe get to know people and get that mentorship with that kind of stuff?
Well, look, I think we talked about a couple of obvious contributions that organizations like INSA, and in this case, INSA in particular, make. One, of course, is sponsoring not just the paper that you and I've been talking about, but a whole series of papers and other events that focus on the intelligence community, the intelligence discipline, intelligence professionals. And obviously, with those events, people get the opportunity to network. I don't want to minimize that. This is networking in sort of the, you know, social scene sense. This is networking to build connections that can be leveraged on a day-to-day basis when you're actually attacking an intelligence problem. So I think that networking is important, and INSA helps literally sponsor the development of those networks. They also do something else that that your listeners may not be familiar with. They do offer, they do sponsor awards, particularly in this case, Derek, for young professionals across all of the segments of the Intelligence and National Security Alliance, to include government agencies and private concerns. But a whole series of awards for juniors who are up-and-comers, to give them a sense of their of their value and how much we appreciate their dedication and commitment, and also to give organizations a chance to reach out and recognize their junior staff. Lots of people recognize the seniors. They do, you know, dinners in their name. And I do think the award series that INSA sponsors for young professionals is especially important in that regard.
You know, and when we talk about this, this conversation has been going on more and more and kind of getting out there. I know, Dr. Sanders, you're going to be at the Institute of World Politics on October 29th, kind of doing a session coming up. And people can find that at IWP.edu and go to events. But there's a whole kind of cyber intelligence series that's going on where you're going to be talking. Talk to us about the one you're going to be on and you know, the whole panel that you're going to be talking about out there, because, you know, sometimes people need to come out to these sessions, hear what's going on, and meet and talk to the experts and really kind of get something and then move forward with their career. What are you going to be talking about there?
Well, think of our conversation this morning as a relatively long movie trailer for the symposium that we're going to do here in a couple of weeks.
And all we need is a soundtrack. Series. All we need is a soundtrack, Dr. Sanders. We need a little music in the background.
And some movie stars.
That's right. That's right.
it's going to be more detail around this particular subject with people on the panel who've actually been there, done that. I think that's important. And maybe most importantly, because we don't have that opportunity here today, is for people in the audience to ask questions, to interact. And I'm hoping that we get a mix in the audience of young professionals who may be deciding whether they want to become this strange new intelligence analyst, cyber intelligence analyst, as well as seasoned folks who may be thinking about retooling their career. I think the chance for that interaction in more depth, that would be the benefit of coming to that particular INSA event with the Institute of World Politics and all of the events in the series.
You know, Dr. Sanders, as we think about this, and I want you to kind of think about this for the next segment, especially as you're kind of talking about, you know, a person who may be thinking about now becoming, you know, this cyber intelligence analyst. I mean, this is kind of something that's come up over the past couple of years, a new title, a new dynamic in terms of, you know, where do you fit in the structure? I want to talk about, as we go into the next segment, for a person who's thinking about this, what do you think is the preparation time? What do you think in terms of, you know, a person getting all this together? Is this a couple year program? If a person's been dedicated? And then with all of that, where do you see cyber intelligence analysts fitting within organizations, whether it be an agency, a company? Are they going to be part of the CIO shop? Are they going to be part of a more of an analytical unit? Sometimes people wonder, where do I fit within the organization? Or is this going to be its own standalone unit that is going to be within certain agencies, organizations, or companies? I want to talk about that when we come back. We're talking to Dr. Ron Sanders. He is an expert on this. I want to tell you about his paper that he helped write. It's called Cyber Intelligence, Preparing Today's Talent for Tomorrow's Threats. It was done by the Cyber Intelligence Task Force for INSA, the Intelligence and National Security Alliance, and he was one of the co-authors in this paper. Dr. Ron Sanders is Vice President and Senior Fellow at Booz Allen Hamilton. He's formerly Associate Director of National Intelligence and the first Chief Human Capital Officer in the U.S. intelligence community. We're going to be taking a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, you got to go back and listen to the previous segments online. We have been talking about cyber intelligence, the workforce of cyber intelligence. We're talking about a new career field that is really emerging that people should be thinking about getting into. Becoming a cyber intelligence analyst is a growing field, going to be a needed field, it's going to be something that we're going to need for a long time, especially as, you know, the Internet of Things, the cyber community, the social dynamics of social media, these things are not going anywhere. The Internet is only becoming such a bigger part of our lives. So we need people who are going to look at the threats, understand them, look at the people who are trying to cause harm, and then make sure that we catch them, prevent them, and everything else. We're talking to Dr. Ron Sanders. He's Vice President and Senior Fellow at Booz Allen Hamilton. He's also formerly Associate Director of National Intelligence and the first Chief Human Capital Officer in the U.S. intelligence community. He's a co-author of a report that came out just recently called Cyber Intelligence, Preparing Today's Talent for Tomorrow's Threats. It's from the Cyber Intelligence Task Force at INSA, the Intelligence and National Security Alliance. Dr. Sanders, for a person who's thinking about maybe changing careers, you know, analysts or whoever the case is, or a technical person, and now think about getting into this, what do you think the timeline is to get somebody prepared and training? And then if they, when they go into an organization, what are you seeing organizations put these people in?
I think that's something that's emerging and evolving. I think there are a number of models. And again, one of the things that we're advocating for without necessarily positing a solution is that begin to map out some of the career paths and career tracks that a cyber intelligence analyst can take. And Derek, here's the interesting thing, and we may get more into this in a little bit near the end of the program. We've focused most of our time on young folks who are either entering college or in college, and they're trying to decide whether this is the track they want to take. As we've discussed at length today, I think it's a pretty appealing track. It's got technical aspects to it. It's got the analytic skills. It's all about finding and solving interesting puzzles. But let me tell you where I think that career track leads. It's not just junior folks beginning their career. I think today's ranks of cyber intelligence are filled with people who have retooled their careers. Again, either grown up as a classic intelligence analyst, national security, business intelligence analyst, with all of the tools and tools that come with that, or they could have come up through the IT ranks and initially specializing in cybersecurity and cyber threats, and then broaden their horizons with the tradecraft. As I said, we've seen a combination of both, but that's at the mid-career level where people have retooled. And it's pretty clear that retooling works just as well as somebody deciding ab initio that they're going to be one of these things. I will. This is my view, and we touched on it a bit in the paper. I think at the end of the day, this is a C-suite skill. This is as important to an organization, whether it's a government agency or a private concern, as the CIO, the chief risk officer, the chief HR officer, you name it. This is a true C-suite skill because, as we know from our daily lives, we live on the web. We live in the networks. Our data is everywhere, sometimes not as protected as it needs to be. So every CEO and COO and CXO, chief officer, fill in the blank, needs to know enough about this to understand the threats and the risks along with all of the opportunities. And somebody who's grown up in this area, who understands the technical side as well as the strategic side, and I think that's where the intelligence side of this leads you to. This is all about the strategic side of this. I think there are potentially career paths right into the executive suite, not necessarily subordinate to a CIO or a chief information security officer. One of the things we've seen at Booz Allen, Derek, is the emergence of so-called chief risk officers. And they not just cybersecurity risk, but business personnel risk, all of the risks that could interfere with a company or agency accomplishing its mission. And given the ubiquitous nature of the cyber threat, more and more of those risk officers in the C-suite coming up through the cyber intel ring.
And Dr. Sanders, you just real quick and keep on going, but you mentioned something before about the counterintelligence. Now we're dealing with this insider threat scenario, and I'm assuming that chief risk officer would be the person who's looking at, you know, I mean, we as with the Snowden effect and everything else, we're looking not only as a person can now bring in a USB or something like that and take, you know, either classified documents or for a company intellectual property and cause just as much harm.
That's exactly right. And this chief risk officer, for example, it goes by various styles, but let's use that for purposes of this discussion, has to be able to connect all of those dots in both a strategic and operational way. So take insider threat. Ultimately, most organizations have a personnel security branch. They have an HR director who is responsible for ensuring the trustworthiness of the organization's employees, et cetera. That is one important aspect. But personnel security, dealing with insider threats, is part of a whole threat vector, not just insider but outsider. And that chief risk officer has to look at all of those things and connect all of those dots. And again, I think ultimately that's where that's the skill set that someone would learn, a cyber intelligence analyst, as we've defined it in today's program and in the INSA paper.
You know, as we think about this, we only got a couple of seconds. You know, what would be your kind of final thoughts as we think about this kind of dynamic for the future, Dr. Sanders?
I think it's both daunting and exciting. I think, you know, focusing on cyber intelligence as we've defined it, it's an emerging discipline. But to me, it's a pretty powerful blend of hard and soft skills, the analytic skills and the technical skills. It operates at both the strategic and the operational tactical level. So there's a lot to offer, but it's a demanding skill set. It takes really smart, really creative people who think both left brain and right brain, and not many people have that ability.
Right.
So I think finding people who have that aptitude, developing them in a more disciplined and rigorous way rather than just sort of learning by doing, mentoring them the way you and I've talked about, and making sure that they see a career path for them from the entry level through senior and master right on up to potentially the C-suite, I think that's what the future promises. But it does take a lot of people working together to make it happen, competing maybe for individual talent, but as, with organizations like INSA as the broker, the honest broker, bringing them together as an entire public-private partnership to increase the supply of this kind of talent. Because I will tell you, this kind of talent is vital for national and economic security.
Dr. Ron Sanders, he's vice president and senior fellow at Booz Allen Hamilton, formerly associate director of the National Intelligence and first chief human capital officer in the U.S. intelligence community. Also, one of the authors of this paper on cyber intelligence about kind of creating this new dynamic. He's part of that intelligence and national security alliance workforce, task force, I should say, that wrote this paper about preparing this cyber intelligence analyst, getting this person prepared for today's talent for tomorrow's threats. Look at the paper. He will be speaking at the Institute of World Politics on October 29th. He'll be there. Go on IWP.edu and find that out. Go on InsaOnline.org. There's a lot of information to find out about what's going on. Thank you, Dr. Sanders.
Thanks for having me, Derek.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.